Welcome to today's edition of the Maya Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Haley Gilley. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news, and the show starts with a look at California agricultural news. The combination of lower mango crops and subsequent higher prices has impacted the consumption of mangoes, a fruit that has generally seen a good year quality-wise. Customers that used to sell an average of 2,000 cases are now selling an average of 1,000 cases. Prices have a lot to do with the consumption going down, and hopes are high that with the spring and summer months, consumption goes higher. Throughout the winter, the supply of mangoes has been low. Ecuador, Peru, and Brazil the whole winter were very high priced and low on production, with roughly only 30 to 40% of the yields of other years. Production overseas has largely finished now, though there are some Tommy Atkins mangoes still arriving from Brazil and some Kents from Peru. However, economic factors may also be at play in mango movement. People don't buy as much as they used to in general, and strong grocery pricing is weighing heavily on consumers' minds. California Wines is launching its 13th annual Down to Earth Month, celebrating the state's global leadership in wine sustainability. Throughout April, the campaign highlights California's commitment to sustainable viticulture and winemaking through environmental stewardship, economic impact, social equity, and community engagement. California, the world's fourth largest wine-producing region, has long been a global leader in sustainable wine growing. Today, 80% of the state's wine is produced in a certified sustainable winery. By prioritizing sustainable practices, the state's growers produce coveted wines while protecting our environment, being a good employer and neighbor, and ensuring vibrant family farms and businesses for generations to come. California wine producers are building a wine community where economic success, environmental stewardship, and social responsibility thrive together. To give consumers an inside look at the California wine community's innovative sustainable practices, dozens of wineries and associations across the state are hosting interactive events, activities, and special offers, from eco-focused vineyard tours to wine tastings to festivals all month long. The National Milk Producers Federation, the largest U.S. dairy farmer organization and the industry's premier policy voice in Washington, submitted its final formal legal brief on their behalf for federal milk marketing order modernization to USDA. The NMPF brief, which was submitted March 29th and hand-delivered to USDA today, emphasized that those farmers are the reason the system exists and that, by law, their priorities are preeminent in USDA consideration of a final plan. In contrast to proposals driven by narrow self-interest, NMPF's package of proposals reflect its broad-based membership and consensus-driven approach, which resulted in unanimous approval from its board of directors last year. With that unity unbroken, they look forward to USDA's consideration of NMPF's solid hearing record, which was built along with its recent submitted brief, as well as the department's recommended decision expected at the beginning of July. The state's water chief last week emphasized the need to better manage flood flows and groundwater during wet periods to improve water supply reliability during dry periods. During the California Farm Bureau Capital Ag Conference in Sacramento, California Department of Water Resources Director Carla Nemeth highlighted work underway and outlined long-term plans to help the state adapt more broadly. She also acknowledged that investments in water infrastructure, which farmers have urged for years, have been slow coming. Despite weather, production, and pest challenges, positive projections continue for the 2024-2025 California avocado season. A rainy 2023 brought much-needed replenishment for water storage reservoirs, avocado grower Darren Miller tells FreshFruitPortal.com. Miller works at his family's farm in coastal San Luis County. In late February, the California Avocado Commission forecasted 208 million pounds to be produced by the state in the 2024-2025 season. Miller estimated that the figure could go up to 210 million pounds across approximately 50,000 acres planted in the state. Supply of baby Jim lettuce has finished up harvest in Yuma, Arizona, and production has transitioned to Salinas, California, where harvest has just begun. Supplies to start the Salinas region are strong. Baby Jim is a new program that just began at the start of the Yuma season in January, so this will be the first time that volume will be coming out of Salinas on this project. The season is about 4 to 8 days behind schedule this year on many leaf and lettuce items. This is a result of the cooler, wetter weather received this winter, which has slowed plant growth down quite a bit. As for demand, it seems to be fairly steady during this transitional period. This means Andy Boy Baby Jim lettuce may be able to step in and take advantage of the overall lighter lettuce supply during the transitional period. We hope that consumption and demand of this lettuce will continue to increase as the product reaches more marketplaces and gains more awareness by our consumers. In becoming more familiar with the product, consumers will also learn that the Andy Boy Baby Gym Lettuce Bags will be transitioning, along with the company's other packaged leafy green commodities, to 30% post-consumer recycled plastic. This is an initiative that's part of the company's overall commitment to sustainability. As for pricing, while lettuce and leaf markets have been fairly active during this transition time, it has stayed consistent and steady on Baby Gym Lettuce, given it is more of a specialty program. The most recent U.S. citrus crop forecast, March 2024, for the 2023-2024 is 4.85 million tons, down 1% from the 2022-2023 final utilized total of 4.9 million tons. The March 2024 USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service crop production report forecasts that domestic producers will grow 2.77 million tons of oranges, an 11% increase from final production in the 2022-2023 season. Grapefruit production is expected to reach 340,000 tons, up 4% from 2022 to 2023. In the September 2023 Fruit and Tree Nuts Outlook report, USDA ERS documented steady decreases in almond, walnut, and hazelnut prices from their record highs in the mid-2010s through the 2022-23 marketing year. Recently, collected trade data from the U.S. Department of Commerce, Bureau of the Census, suggests that prices remain low through the start of the 23-24 marketing year. Industry expectations about high tree nut yields in 24-25, bolstered by improvements in weather during almond pollination and the availability of water in California during the spring, are expected to put downward pressure on prices in late 2023-24. Recent research utilizing remote sensing and artificial intelligence by UC Santa Barbara and NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory highlights potential for significant water savings in California's agriculture through crop substantiation. The study suggests a theoretical reduction in water usage by approximately 93% if water-intensive crops like almonds and alfalfa were replaced with less thirsty options such as grains and hay. However, the lead author, Anna Bozer, emphasizes the economic challenges of such a transition, citing the higher economic viability of more water-intensive crops in the state. The research also explores more feasible strategies for reducing water consumption. By fallowing merely 5% of the fields currently cultivating the most water-demanding crops, a reduction of water usage by over 9% could be achieved. Further savings of 10 to 11% are possible through enhancing water efficiency and partially shifting cultivation from the most moderately water-consuming crops. This approach could entail transitioning from crops like kiwis and almonds to corn or sorghum, especially in water-stressed regions like Tulare County. Despite the potential for water savings, the economic implications pose significant challenges, particularly given the high value in global demand for California's specialty crops, such as pistachios, almonds, and grapes, which are major contributors to the state's agricultural employment and revenue.
Early registration for the 2024 Crop Consultant Conference, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors, is now open. The popular event for certified crop advisors, pest control advisors, grower applicators, and industry professionals is the mainstay for all continuing education needs this year and will take place on September 25th and 26th at the Visalia Convention Center. Visit myaglife.com/events for the early discounted rate of $275 per person, which includes the live conference, a trade show with 70 plus exhibits, first class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. We'll see you there.
Ag tech company BioTalus has partnered with Novonesis, a global leader in biosolutions, to advance Evoca NG, the next generation of BioTalus's product candidate Evoca, which aims to control diseases like botrytis and powdery mildew, to the final stage of development. The partnership will allow the company to introduce its innovative agrobody technology on a global scale. Evoca NG is a biofungicide candidate with the same active ingredients as BioTalus's first-generation Evoca, but with an optimized production process and formulation, enabling commercialization of the product at competitive levels. The basis of the proprietary agrobody platform was based on a 1993 discovery in Brussels, Belgium, that determined that camelids, the family which includes camels, llamas, and alpacas, have traditional antibodies, but also have another special type of antibody similar in structure, known as heavy-chain-only antibodies, explained Carlo Bouton, chief scientific officer for BioTalus.
Agrobodies are the smallest functional domain of such special type antibodies, of such heavy chain only antibodies. And so the smallest functional domain that is specifically recognizing the antigen, or in our case, specifically recognizing the pathogen or the pest. So these domains vary in sequence, especially at the regions that interact with the pathogen. And the nice thing is that they are extremely useful for agricultural purposes because they are relatively stable in nature and they gradually degrade into amino acids, which are the building blocks for all proteins in nature. So that makes them very suited for our purpose in the agricultural sector.
He added that agrobodies can be produced via a natural fermentation process similar to beer.
So what we do is we encode the amino acid sequence of such an agrobody in our production host, our fermentation host, and that host then produces the agrobody protein. Typical fermentation hosts are bacteria, yeast, fungi, and each fermentation host or expression host has its own characteristics. And we observe that expression yields can differ from host to host. And then I think we're coming to that through our collaboration with Novonesis. We have identified an optimal expression host that is able to increase the expression yields much higher than what we had internally thus far.
Once completed, the agreement will secure Novonesis as the global manufacturing partner for Evoca NG, leveraging its leading fermentation capabilities. BioTalis CEO Kevin Helash says the partnership will help them compete on a commercial scale against synthetic chemistry.
We've always believed in this technology of the protein-based biocontrols derived from these antibodies, these heavy chain antibodies. So, you know, I think, Carla, you would say coming over to the ag side from pharma, I don't think of all the questions you had, probably will it work was not on the top of your mind, right? There, we had other questions. Two big ones for us was one, could we create a biocontrol that is as efficacious as synthetic chemistry?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Carlo and his team have developed our first candidate of our platform, which is Evoca. It's a biofungicide. It has a new mode of action categorization from FRAC, and that is in front of both the EPA and the European regulatory authorities. And through our trial work, both in lab and in the real world, we have proven to ourselves and to the industry that it can work and does work as good as synthetic chemistry. So that's a big check mark. The second one is, can we produce an agrobody at commercial scale and at a cost of goods that will allow us to compete against synthetic chemistry and provide a solid return on investment for our grower customers? And that's where the Novonesis agreement comes in. So they have I would categorize them, if not the leader in fermentation technology, you know, in the ag sector and probably overall, they certainly are in the top tier for sure. And so that checks a huge box for us and the industry in terms of, yes, we have collaborated with a partner that we are certainly anticipating will be able to provide that for us and for our customers. The benefit as well with the partnership with Novonesis is that we are co-commercializing what we're now calling Evoca NG, next generation, together. So we get the benefit of the Novonesis know-how in fermentation. We've got the capability and capacity of Novonesis in terms of their contacts in the industry to take our products to the market. And then what's equally exciting for both of us is that we are looking forward, and Carlo again will be leading the charge for us, of investigating the potential of combining our respective platforms to create even a bigger and broader range of products that we can take to the marketplace.
As BioTalis embarks on its partnership with Novonesis, they are looking forward to being able to develop products from it for the foreseeable future.
On the Novonesis, so we started with Evoca NG, as you said, Kevin, and then the next step is exploring whether we can create synergies between our platform and their platform, and that's going to be super exciting as well.
It's not a one trick pony at all. It's actually a base to build from, and not only from our own platform, but as we talked about earlier, combinations with companies like Novo Nesis and others to look at different combinations. You know, we're working with Syngenta. Carlo's managing that relationship for an insecticide project. We've got Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation working with us for a fungicide for targeted predominantly and for African farmers, and more to come, you know, as we see it in the future. We're just getting rolling, I would say, in terms of the potential of the two companies together and using our respective horsepower and knowledge.
Helash says the importance of working on new modes of action will be paramount in helping to feed the world.
The need by growers all over the world to supplement their toolbox, and especially around fungicides and insecticides and herbicides, due to one, resistance, which is really restricting the efficacy of the products that are out there. And then secondly, the restriction around products that are available to them, because more products are coming off the market than, you know, what we see are coming into the market that work effectively. You know, the need for the world to create these types of products and new modes of actions, to me, is paramount for us to continue to feed the world, produce safe, healthy, affordable food for everyone. And so, yeah, we're, you know, we couldn't be happier in the space we're in and the work we're doing. And we look forward to being here for quite some time, creating new products, as we've talked about.
More information about BioTalus and their partnership with Novo Nesis can be found at biotalus.com. For MyAgLife, this is Kristen Platts.
By partnering with JCS Marketing Incorporated, your company can achieve 3.5 million impressions to growers, consultants, and industry professionals annually. Our comprehensive media suite, which includes prestigious publications as well as dynamic websites, targeted emails, engaging podcasts, and premier trade shows, provides a strategic platform for targeting key decision makers. This approach can amplify your company's visibility to a specific audience and fosters meaningful connections, positioning your brand at the forefront of the agricultural community. Don't wait for success to come to you. Call our office today at 559-352-4456. That's 559-352-4456.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture has filed an administrative complaint against Safeway Fresh Foods, LLC, for alleged violations of the Perishable Agricultural Commodities Act. The company, operating from New Jersey, allegedly failed to promptly pay 13 produce sellers for $3,863,509 from October 2021 through July 2023. Safeway Fresh Foods LLC will have an opportunity to request a hearing should USDA find that the company committed repeated and flagrant violations. It would be barred from the produce industry as a licensee for 3 years or 2 years by posting a USDA-approved surety bond. Furthermore, its principals could not be employed by or affiliated with any PACA licensee for 2 years or 1 year with the posting of a USDA-approved surety bond. On March 26, a container ship rammed into Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge, resulting in the structure's collapse and the tragic loss of six construction workers. Aside from the everlasting impacts to the families that lost loved ones, the destroyed bridge has physically cut off key coal, container, and automobile terminals at the Port of Baltimore from the outside world. In 2021, the port's terminals processed over 37 million short tons of combined import and export products. This ranks the Port of Baltimore 17th in terms of cargo throughout the United States. According to the government of Maryland, the port generates over $3.3 billion in personal income, 15,330 direct jobs, and 139,190 related jobs. As the wreckage of the bridge continues to prevent the movement of ships to and from the port terminals, negative economic impacts compound.
How might the recent closure of access to the Port of Baltimore, Maryland from a bridge collapse impact ag-based supply chains, imports, and exports? Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg recently told reporters,
"This is an important port for both imports and exports, and it's America's largest vehicle handling port, which is important not only for car imports and exports, but also for farm equipment."
With the state of Maryland listing over 1.3 million tons of roll-on and roll-out tractors, combines, and hay balers in 2023. In addition, farm and food commodities such as sugar, soybeans, grains, and coffee are imported and exported at the Port of Baltimore. That has led to dialogue over the past week to address potential supply chain disruptions and mitigation strategies. That included a meeting in that time frame of the White House Supply Chain Disruption Task Force and members of the ag sector. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
For the 11th consecutive year, all U.S. Walmart stores and Sam's Clubs are teaming up with their customers, members, suppliers, and associates for the annual Fight Hunger, Spark Change campaign to support the Feeding America network of partner food banks. Since its inception in 2014, Fight Hunger, Spark Change has generated more than $186 million for Feeding America in local food banks, helping to secure nearly 1.9 million meals for people facing hunger. This campaign will run online and in stores from April 1st through April 29th. During the campaign, all donations stay local. Sales-activated supplier donations and register donations are directed to a local Feeding America partner food bank located within a store or club's community.
The Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer March results are out. Here is a breakdown of those results.
I'm Jim Minter, Director of the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture, and I'm going to share with you the highlights from this month's survey. The Ag Economy Barometer Index rose 3 points compared to a month earlier. That's a reading of 114, but that left the index still 3 points below where it was a year ago. The Current Condition Index fell 2 points compared to last month, but that index remains 25 points below where it was in March of 2023. The Future Expectation Index rose 5 points compared to a month earlier, and that left that index 7 points higher than it was a year ago. The Farm Financial Performance Index fell 1 point to a reading of 83, and that leaves that index 3 points lower than it was this time last year. When we ask producers what their biggest concerns are for the upcoming year, they remain high input prices, followed by the risk of lower output prices, and interest rates are a concern going forward as well. The Farm Capital Investment Index rose 7 points compared to a month ago and was just 1 point below where it was this time last year. Producers became more optimistic about farmland values. The short-term index was up 9 points from a month earlier, and that left that index 11 points higher than it was in March of 2023. We asked producers this month about whether or not they have engaged in discussions with companies about carbon capture and solar leasing. 18% of the respondents in this month's survey said they'd actually had a conversation with a company about carbon capture on their farming operation over the last 6 months, and 12% said that they'd had a conversation about leasing farmland for the production of solar energy. In a follow-up question posed only to producers who said they'd engaged in a discussion with a solar leasing company in the last 6 months, over half of them said that they were offered a lease rate of over $1,000 an acre, and over a fourth, 27%, said they were offered a rate that exceeded $1,250 per acre. Those are higher rates than we were reporting on earlier surveys. That wraps up the highlights of this month's survey. You can get the full report on our website, which is purdue.edu/agbarometer, and you can also get some more details about this month's report on our podcast, Purdue Commercial Agcast, which is available on major podcast providers and at purdue.edu/commercialag. On behalf of the Center for Commercial Agriculture, I'm Jim Mintert. Thanks for joining us.
Effective immediately, the United States has banned entry of cherries from Quebec, Canada, following detection of the European cherry fruit fly in its province. The USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service announced the decision Monday to prohibit entry of any potential host commodities, including black cherries, sour cherries, and sweet cherries. APHIS is taking this action in response to detections of ECFF in Quebec and the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, expanding its regulatory area to include Quebec. APHIS has determined that Quebec, Canada is subject to the same prohibitions currently in place for Ontario, Canada. The European cherry fruit fly notice expands an import ban established in 2017, already affecting cherries from Ontario over the pest. The other Canadian provinces must certify the origin of their cherries before gaining entry into the United States.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Reports. I'm Haley Gilley. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.